Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
That Man United-Arsenal rivalry was incredible. And the way it developed that stage, they get the one league title. You have Ronaldo in there, you have Rooney in there. I think it was incredible, really.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball. In association with Cadbury. Official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Koigig Podcast. I'm Kathleen McNamee, and as ever, I am joined by the one and only Captain Karen Duggan. Although I feel like I can't say anything nice to you, because you were a bit mean about me last week when I listened back to the podcast after missing one episode, Karen.
Feeling. Really, social lives are not allowed.
That's just shocking. Shocking stuff from myself, I have to say. But probably deserve to be ribbed a little bit for not being around, since I do it to everyone else whenever I'm abandoned.
Emma Byrne is still getting it and she's left the podcast completely. Like that.
One of the lads in work said to me that I didn't put her on the Mount Rushmore because I was like a jealous ex. And I was like, I didn't actually think of it that way whenever I was doing it. But I can see how people would take it.
It feels like that.
Yeah. It does feel. We'll have to go back to saying nice things and wishing her well when the new international window cops up. Opening game against France and then England, because we don't want to jinx our luck when it comes to that.
No. No, definitely not. I think we've enough against us now without jinxing.
I'm still so calm and happy about it. Karen, we might as well look at the league, even though I know you may not want to.
I don't mind. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going the way I thought it would go, in that it's people dropping points that were, you know, we would have thought, you know, the bigger teams will say, and it just being very, very competitive all around. Athlone bounced back well from their defeat to Galway to beat Bowes, only a 1-0 scoreline though, so shows the progress that Bowes are making. Treaty, their first win in a long, long time, again, coming with intent into the league, and we kind of thought they would. They're really an unknown quantity, so for them to kick off with a win was huge and probably a sign of things to come. Good battle then between Rovers and Wexford, 1-1. I didn't see any of it, but I mean, two heavyweights, we'll say, and then Galway. I told you about Galway.
You did say this.
At the end of last season, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with this year. And then Shells, you know, Shells did us dirty, but I mean, they were a better team in the first half. We had chances in the second half. 1-0 maybe would have been more of a reflection, but we were pushing on and they got the second goal. And yeah, they're stacked, to be fair. Like when you see the names that they could bring off the bench, and obviously we're still struggling a little bit injury-wise, and picked one up early in the game as well. And, you know, it's a bit of a struggle for us at the moment, but I think all things considered, we didn't actually play too badly. And obviously we're disappointed to lose, but usually after a Shells game, I'd come onto the podcast and be depressed. But
I was expecting you to be raging or depressed.
Yeah, so I didn't know. I feel a bit different because I was really proud of the girls, and we played well at times. Like it's just one of those games where things didn't go our way, and we know we're kind of up against it again this season. But there was more positives to take from the game than negatives, I thought.
And is that what you were saying to the girls in the dressing room afterwards? Because I imagine like there will be disappointed heads, even if you do play. But, you know, you're not getting.
Yeah, we hate losing. I mean, and it's not something we did much of last year. But the league is changing every year, and you kind of have to pick yourself back up now. Obviously, Shells are gunning for the title. They're going to be thereabouts in the mix the whole way. But it's early enough in the season that we can, you know, we can group together and we can learn from a game like that. Shells were probably braver in possession and just show their experience a bit better than us at times, but that will come hopefully. So not depressed, but not happy either.
It feels like the storylines are getting more and more interesting year on year. Like we've seen the title race over the last couple of seasons has been great. We obviously had the great story about PMAT last year, and you know, coming from a position that a lot of other teams aren't, and not being linked with the men's side as well. And then you have the opening couple of rounds, you know, Sligo drawing with Shells, which is not something we're going to do. Then you guys getting beaten by them, the Shamrock Rovers, Wexford, the fact that they drew, Galway coming and scoring. It's just, it leaves the whole league quite open. And I hope it continues like this, that there are a couple of shock results and there isn't a Shells or someone who pulls away early. I still
I would be surprised if there was a big lead, a big front runner in the league this year. I think it's unlikely that that will happen. I think everyone will take points off each other at some point. It's just about who can be the most consistent, because there's a lot of quality. I think at the moment we're going to see teams changing so much as we're still an amateur league. You know, success can nearly be a downfall. Your players get poached, you know, and stuff like that. So that's why it's really unpredictable. I think in a few years' time, when more resources are pumped into it, you'll kind of start to see dominant forces come through in that way. But for now, we'll just embrace the chaos.
We love a bit of chaos, to be fair. I mean, it's basically what Irish football is built upon. So we'll go with it. And did a little birdie tell me that someone is going to have a bit of a TV show done about them? Did I hear something about this?
Yeah. So last season, production company kind of followed three teams around. So Piemont, Galway and Shelburne. So there's going to be a 4-part series coming out in April. Just basically the journey around the leagues and the cups, and just it's a dual language program. So it's great. It's highlighting the Irish language. I'll be mortified, but it's putting eyes on the league, and, you know, we're constantly trying to promote it. So I will get myself ready for the ridicule and the embarrassment that that will bring, but it's only a good thing. And the fact that it's going to be on RTE, it's huge. Like, it's huge that the league would get that coverage. You know, we've had our few games on TG Cahir and that's been immense, and that sport is growing every year, but something like this hopefully can help take it to the next level, and maybe we'll start to see games even going towards RTE at some point as well.
Which would be great. And I do remember you had the crew in one day when we were filming the podcast. So I hope we get a large feature. No, it's actually all about us, Karen.
Mini series, a little 5-minute cameo will be plenty, I think.
So that starts on April 8th, at 8 p.m. on RTE1. And it'll be every Monday for 4 weeks. And as you say, it follows different teams around. So it follows you at Piemont and also Tara O'Hanlon and Erin McLaughlin. And then for Shells, you have Rachel Graham, Rebecca Devereaux and Jessie Stapleton. And for Galway, Jenny Sachery, Abigail Rowan and Eve Dawson. So yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a really good show. As you said, it's great to have it on RTE and to bring that sort of eyes to the league. And it's good timing as well with the fact it's around the international window. I assume that was on purpose on their behalf. But we look forward
to watching. It's early in the league, so hopefully it'll pique people's interest and we'll start seeing more attendances at games and stuff like that. So yeah, it should be great. I don't know what it'll look like. I don't know why. I don't want to think about it.
Karen, you know you're Ireland's media darling when it comes to football at this stage. I mean, you're practically
everywhere.
No,
but we'll be after this. See, when it comes to like my own, if they had a mic close to me on pitch, I don't think I'd be so media savvy.
All the Calm Collection columns and analysis that you offer on RTE and on the podcast here, all suddenly
they're all lies. So. You're not the real me at all.
Oh, very good. Well, I look forward to watching it, and I'm sure everyone who listens to the podcast too. Coming up a little bit later on the podcast, we will have the one and only Jilly Flaherty rejoining us again to look at the league. But first up, we are going to look at Emma Carroll's Team of the Week. We are joined as ever by Emma Carroll to reflect on who played well this week and who maybe was just on the outskirts of getting into our Team of the Week. Emma, how are we feeling about this week's team?
Wonderful. Although Friday seems like
confident. I love it.
So far away. So I'll start off. We got Spencer in goal, Percy, Fahey and Greenwood at the back. Cuthbert, Hasegawa, Holland and Daly is in midfield. And then Lauren James, Lauren Hemp and Leanne Kernan up top.
That wouldn't be some Irish bias in there at all, would it?
It's Paddy's weekend, and she scored. No, but she was excellent. She could have had a couple of goals, and her tracking back as well. And she was playing more in a kind of a two up top, which was good to see, rather than just out wide. So
celebratory putting someone in because they came back and also they're Irish.
She played well. She deserves it.
I'll allow it.
She deserves it.
Karen, what are your feelings on the team?
Yeah, I mean, I think you probably could have put the whole Chelsea midfield in just the way they absolutely overran Arsenal in there. But yeah, Cuthbert kind of, she sets the tone for them in there, doesn't she? And you know my feelings, I love Hasegawa. Yeah, Niamh getting her shout. I love Niamh Fahey, so we'll allow the bias in, absolutely. Well, I'm really surprised to see Lauren James. No, when you miss him, like
such a shock. I know.
Yeah, the only other person who I thought stood out again, and you know, we always say it when we see her play, how she not get more game time, is Mary Fowler. I thought for Man City again, she's so bright when she gets on the ball. Like her movement's so good. So she's the only one who would possibly be in with a shout, but I'm not taking Lauren Hemp or Leanne Kiernan out either. So
I think Fowler's good. I thought Laura Coombs was good as well. Probably worth an honourable mention.
I mean, City are just good, aren't they? And
good team.
Yeah, bounce back after, you know, their cup exits and stuff. They obviously needed that win. It was expected, but, you know, the big players stood up for them as well, and having Shaw back is huge.
One person I did kind of toy with, and then I decided not to, because she ultimately got the red card, was Napier for Bristol. Was really good. Mm-hmm. Had a really good game. It was like 85 minutes or something and she got a second yellow, and I was like, no, you were nailed on to be in this team of the week. So I think had she not got that red card, she would have been in. So I think she's definitely working.
Yeah, it was a bit of a rush really of blood there. She didn't really need to hammer into
when you're on a yellow as well.
Especially when they were still in the game. You know, it was only 1-0 at that point as well. So fair play to Bristol again. Didn't have much possession, but I mean, they held it up, and yeah, maybe we'll get a Bristol player in before the end of the year, because
we'll try to be saying goodbye to them sometime
after that. Say,
Emma, you weren't tempted to put Nuskin in there after filling in at centre back last week and then coming on and being like Chelsea striker this week after they lost.
Another one that's kind of on the bench. She probably, the two goals she probably got lucky with, really. Maybe you have to be in the position to score them. Like, the first one was a tap in, and then the second she knew nothing about whatsoever. It just came off her. And she's like, good goal. Makes the bench probably.
Yeah. I think she was good for it though. Again, I think Chelsea probably deserved that lead at that point, and wherever it came from, I think they deserved the lead, and you don't care where it comes off. It's good to see someone different stepping up for Chelsea as well. Good if you're a Chelsea fan, I guess. Not so much. I'm sure we'll get on to it.
Say the rest of the league are like, please, no, can Chelsea stop just discovering these random players that can play any position, no matter how many injuries they get?
They're going to need that depth, you know, with the schedule that they have coming up again. Champions League coming up shortly as well. So, and It's still a tight one between City and Chelsea. Like, it's really, I don't know which way it's going to go. Hard kind of leaning towards City because of how they play, but then Chelsea just know how to get the job done, don't they?
I'm surprised with Chelsea as well, because their press was so good. I think it kind of shocked Arsenal almost.
Yeah, and they did, like, but Arsenal
did.
See
that from Chelsea? You're like,
They reversed the role from December completely. Absolutely. Arsenal were shell shot, and they were all over the place at the back. All over the place.
If City and Chelsea played each other today, never mind who's going to win the league, who would win?
Before last week, I would have said City, but then obviously the cup exits kind of threw a little spanner in the mix. So I was like, I still fancy City, yeah. Emma?
Second to
call it.
I can't call it. It's too close.
There's no
fence
here.
Yesterday, I thought that you were going to get their 6 goals yesterday, and it was just going to be completely same on point, same on goal difference. Oh God. I don't know. City just looks so good.
Yeah.
It's hard to think who could stop them. I think somebody could pull a result out against Chelsea, though, is the thing.
For me, I feel like it's a game that'll be still for ages, and then someone like Mikariel will pop up and get like just a ridiculous goal that Chelsea. And it won't be pretty from either side, and it won't be clean from either side, but it'll be something like that that'll be the difference.
Yeah. Mm. Well, are we saying so Arsenal are just out of the running now?
They have to be.
There's no way they can come back. There would have to be some miracle results, like Chelsea and City just completely capitulate for the final six games.
Yeah, it's down to, if Arsenal have a chance to win, it's down to Chelsea and City messing up.
Yeah.
And it's not like they even have to play each other yet as well. So like they've played both at home and away then. So who knows? Maybe you can do us a favour, Karen, and get United to beat them next week.
I doubt it.
Emma, thank you very much for that.
Cheers.
Thanks, Emma.
Now, I am delighted to say that we are joined by WSL legend Chilly Flaherty to review the weekend's action. And what a weekend of action it was. We'll go back to the very start, even though it makes me very sad to have to do this, but Chelsea absolutely demolishing Arsenal in that 3-1 win on Friday evening, despite the injury crisis, despite the Emma Hayes comments beforehand, despite the half-hour delay in kickoff and the issue with the socks. There was so much going on before this match even started, never mind what was going on the pitch. But Jilly, Chelsea just totally turned Arsenal around from what had happened earlier on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, it was literally her at that game at the Emirates when Arsenal dominated Chelsea. It was like the reverse. You know, I think it was Chelsea had a great start. They was on the front foot. Arsenal looked scared, in all honesty. They looked like they was petrified every time Chelsea attacked. But yeah, I mean, obviously I was there. I was commentating on the game and the whole sock issue and, I mean, the DJ, he was doing absolute bits. Like, I was ready to drop the mic and go out. Like, he was unreal. If it weren't for him, I think the game would have been so flat at the start of it. So he had all that, and obviously the delay in the kickoff. And then it just really wasn't the game I was expecting it to be and hoped it would have been, I think, because it's Friday night, it's on the telly, got a great atmosphere there. And it was, I mean, for a Chelsea fan, it was the best result they could have had. And it was what they wanted to see, lots of goals. But I was just disappointed, in all honesty, with the whole build-up before the game and obviously in the week. And knowing how much, if Arsenal had got that result, how that would have shook up the WSL even more. So, I was a little bit disappointed.
Karen, we were talking a little bit when we were doing our team of the week there about Chelsea's midfield, and that was an area that Arsenal had completely dominated, and it was one that you had thought they would probably dominate again, but wasn't to be.
No, not at all. And I think it just filtered out from the back. I think obviously the first goal, Zinsberger should stop. It's probably the worst we've seen Williamson play, and you know, they're kind of two positions. You want them to be steadying influences for the team and lead the line a bit in terms of when it comes to just managing the game, and just bad mistakes, like playing the ball into danger zones when Chelsea's press was so good, and the crossfield balls that were just getting intercepted, like taking unnecessary risks, particularly when you've gone 1-0 down, you need to kind of stem the flow a bit, but the nerves just seem to filter out through the game. I can't really remember in the first half, any good sustained play by Arsenal. They were just totally shook in that first half, and the damage was done. Chelsea were never going to let Arsenal come back into it fully, no matter what they did in the second half. And they let them have possession a little bit in the second half, but they knew they wouldn't do that much damage to them, not in the way that Chelsea did to Arsenal. So it was one of those days where too many of the leaders didn't step up for Arsenal, and they had too many people playing subpar against Chelsea, and Chelsea will capitalise on that all day.
Mm. Jilly, for you, like, we've seen this Chelsea team so many times snatch a win from the jaws of defeat, or they'll be in the middle of a fire, and whether it's injuries, whether it's stuff that's happening off the pitch, they just seem to be able to mentally switch somewhere and get the grind out the win, no matter how good or bad it looks on the pitch. And you were saying about Arsenal, they almost looked a bit defeated when they were out on the pitch already. Really going into this game, mentality-wise, they should have been in a good place. So, well, we know there's stuff going on at Chelsea. We know we don't have the injuries that they do compared to previous times. Yes, it's at Stamford Bridge, but we're used to playing in big stadiums. We're used to packing out big stadiums.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think it was just, I just expected a lot more from Arsenal in that sense. Obviously, like, they are used to playing at the Emirates. They're used to playing with a big crowd. And it, for me, it was the game of whoever was going to start on the front foot and win the first few couple of second, first and second balls were going to dominate that game. And Chelsea won the first few, first, second balls. They was running at Arsenal. They was having shots early. Lauren James was shooting early on. And that just put Arsenal on the back foot. And like Kevin said, there was no leaders whatsoever on that pitch. Like, that's, in all honesty, like I said it on air, I've not seen Leah Williamson play like that for a long time, to be honest with you. She was, I don't know if that's because she's coming back from injury, you know, and it's a bit of the confidence and you're trying to get your second wind. Obviously, being out for a while, but Arsenal just lacked leaders. They lacked someone who could take the game by the scruff of the neck. And I was commentating with Emma and Emma Byrne, and she was going, there was one on the, I think on the first goal, I think, when Lauren James runs with the ball, like no one touches her. And I went, Emma, if that was us playing back when we was at Arsenal, what would you have done? She was like, I'd have ripped your head off, because no one went and closed the ball down. No one went and put pressure on the ball. And even then, the first goal goes in, the second goal goes in, and they get in a nice little huddle. And it's like, no one's in there going, like, come on, like, you should be doing better. You've got to pride yourself on your own individual performances. And I think sometimes you're going to fall to have one or two players have an off game. But in all fairness, 11 players, every single player we played on that pitch had an off game. And Chelsea, I think Chelsea were thinking, listen, we're not having what happened at the Emirates again. We're at home, you know. And I think, like I said, whoever started that game, the first 10, 15 minutes on the front foot was going to win it. And in my opinion, Chelsea bullied Arsenal.
Angela, we were having this debate just before you came on. If Chelsea and City played each other tomorrow, and not necessarily for the title, just if they played each other, who do you think would come out on top? What was everyone else's reaction to?
It's really difficult because, like, when they played last game against each other, and you're talking the league game, yeah, mm-hmm. and at King's Meadow, Chelsea couldn't get nowhere near City. Like, and that, I said, that's the worst I've seen probably Chelsea play at home at King's Meadow, at their home ground. Then obviously you're talking about the cup, and I mean, it was a pretty flat game, to be fair, when Chelsea obviously won, that Lauren James gets the goal, but it weren't really an exciting game. And I feel like when City and Chelsea play each other, it's sort of, neither team wants to make a mistake because they understand how important that game is. And it's not like these games are 2-3-0 or whatever. They're like 1-0, 1-0. So it's fine margins. Watching Chelsea on Friday night, how they played, and then watching City yesterday, if they was to play each other tonight, how Chelsea played, I'd go with Chelsea. Because I think City yesterday were, I mean, Brighton sat in a low block, but City found it really hard to break them down. It took a moment from Lauren Hemp where, I mean, the keeper should do better, in Sophie Bagley should do better with the first goal. But City were knocking on the door, but it was, if you're looking at the two performances from Friday night and Sunday, I would back Chelsea to win if they played tonight. But next week, I could say, oh, I back City to win.
Well, it's been a complicated week for City as well, Karen. They went from, you know, being on track to possibly winning the triple, and then that obviously didn't happen, knocked out of the league and the cup. So they needed a result against Brighton, which they did get, even if there was a bit of a struggle to get some of the goals in.
Yeah, again, it was another game that we just expected City to kind of go and roll over Brighton. But like Jilly said, Brighton made it difficult for them. A lot of teams are going to do that against City now, just the firepower they have. They can't afford to let City's wingers get in behind because they do so much damage. Yeah. If the first goal doesn't go in, I do think the keeper should be doing a bit better. The angle was tight. But, I mean, City are just City, and then four different goal scorers as well. I mean, that really is the difference, I think, with City this year, is that even when Shaw was out, they've got other people who are stepping up and putting goals away. And Coombs has popped up with an important few. And I was singing Mary Fowler's praises earlier as well. I think she's brilliant. So business as usual for City. I'd still back City against Chelsea just because I love them to play. I would, yeah. I think they just are so fluid when they get going. But yeah, Chelsea would obviously probably win, but we'll never know now. We'll just have this argument, this hypothetical argument. But yeah, the run-ins are going to be really interesting. You'd be wondering if Man United can do one big performance left, do Chelsea a favour. They're not going to do anything else this season, so I think maybe stopping City winning the league would be a good consolation prize, I would say, as a Man United fan.
I'd say the rest of the league would probably agree with you on that one, in that I think unless you're a Chelsea fan, you're probably rooting for City to win the league just to have something a little bit different and add a little bit more bite into the league for next year. Arsenal still have to play City too, so that could be a very big game, because Arsenal will want to prove something after that big defeat to Chelsea, and they won't want to lose anymore.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they bounce back or if they kind of go away with a whimper now. I just wonder what the effect of a game like that and the result will have on just the morale and the dressing room.
Do you think if you want to go into next season in a good place, you want to finish the season strong? Because if it ends up to be like a position where Arsenal, I mean, they're 6 points behind City and Chelsea now, but if that ends up being like 9 points or even 12 points behind whoever eventually wins the league, that's a pretty big gap to feel like you have going into next season, considering the squad that Arsenal have. And it shouldn't be that size. And I know it is quite easy to get those gaps in the WSL because there are so few games. And speaking of Man United, Karen, it was a pretty routine win against Bristol.
I mean, I feel like I'm repeating myself every week. It's like, yeah, they're not really setting our world on fire, but they got the result that they needed. Probably should praise Bristol for how they equipped themselves. Not a huge amount of shots on target and stuff. I think that's something that Mark's going to really need to look at, certainly next season, just being more direct and actually attacking. There's something lacking up there, obviously, and they haven't replaced Russo. They're trying Paris up top. But yeah, I mean, 2-0 win, got the job done. All sights on next week now.
Billy, what can United do? Because you look at a team like Liverpool and they're on course to have, you know, one of their highest finishes in the league, judging by their results so far and the fact that they've already equaled that points total. They feel like they're kicking on in a way that United haven't, and probably you would have expected the two of them to be going toe-to-toe with each other a bit more for hunting down that third place in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I think for United, I think it's been a disappointing season so far. I think, obviously, there was all the Champions League and then not getting past, and then Skinner obviously saying it's not fair. And it just seems like a bit like with United sometimes, it's sort of the, oh, poor us a little bit. Like, it's even in with the Champions League, and then obviously then with the whole Continental Cup thing going on, like it's sort of, it's just sort of like, oh, you're relying on other teams to like, if United had just done what they needed to do in the Continental Cup, it wouldn't have mattered about Villa. Do you know what I mean? So they was relying on that sort of to get through. I just don't know. For me, like, with United, I don't know whether they need a potential new manager. I just feel like they need just for the size of the club. And there's apparently there's no problem with investment and stuff. Even though they've not been around in the women's game for that long, they've not been had a women's team formed for that long, they're a huge club. Do you know what I mean? They should have the initial attraction of, hold on a minute, Man United are coming in for me, trying to sign me. They should have that anyway. I just don't feel like, I feel like when I think about Liverpool, obviously I was at Liverpool, but Liverpool seem to be so much more solid as a team. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, together as a team, that togetherness, that fight, that, you know, regardless of who we come up against, they will go head to toe with them. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They will literally go and regardless of who it is. I just don't feel like that with United.
Someone asked me, like, how do United play? I don't feel like they lack a bit of identity. And Skinner has had enough time with them now that you should know, like, there should be more fluidity. Like you say, you don't get that vibe that there's, like, they'd go out and die for each other on the pitch in the way that Chelsea would. They give that off, you know. I'd like to see a big shake-up. I'd like to see a real statement signing as well, you know, midfield possibly, and a striker. Big shake-up is needed because they're kind of just going through the motions a little bit now at the moment. Hopefully a cup final would change the complexion of everything, and if they got silverware. But obviously they've drawn Chelsea now, so the route is a bit trickier.
Well, you could again once do us everyone a favor and make things a little bit more interesting by beating Chelsea. It also feels like you were saying, Jilly, there about like getting a big name signing. You just can't imagine, I don't know, as well say opening a newspaper, that's not how most people get their transfer news these days, but like opening Twitter or something and seeing that they've put in a world record bid or a world record fee for someone to come in, even though it has been said before that the investment is there to be made. There's a new ownership that's come in that has committed. And I don't know if that, I say that because it feels like Mark Skinner can't attract those sort of players or convince those sort of players to follow his vision, or because, as you say, that team just doesn't seem to click or doesn't seem to have the will to fight for each other.
Yeah, and I also think as well, like the last 2 years, United have been battling with Russo. Is she going? Is she not going? She don't want a new contract. You've been offered 500,000, whatever it was. All that going on. Then this year, you then have it with Mary Earps as well.
Yeah.
So for the last 2 years, you've got two of your big named players, your main players. There's not the reassurance that they want to stay, that they want to be at the club. You're then letting them just wind down their contracts. And then, like, so you know Russo really in January, there's talk that Russo's going to get signed, right? Or she's going to go. You should then, January time, if you know realistically you're not going to have Russo at the end of the season, you need to go and get someone in who is a big name forward who can replace Russo. Do you know what I mean? You had long enough to know she worked. And listen, I've been in teams with players, even myself. If you're no January time, you really have an idea whether you want to go to stay at the end of the season if your contract's done or you're going to go. You can't be telling me, like, you look at Emma Hayes at Chelsea, she knew probably October, November time that Peniel Harder and Magda Eriksson were going to go. They get their recruitment done then, not waiting until they go and then go, oh, now we need to try and find, replace Harder and Eriksson. They've already done, they've already signed. And that's what I think with United, whether it be Mark Skinner can't really attract those players, or you leave it so late that then who are you left to buy? And I think that's what they've had. They've lost Russo, they've lost Vazier. Like, they're two big players. You've not replaced them. And then obviously now you've potentially got Mary Earp. So there's a lot of things off the pitch with them that is just not done properly, in my opinion. And I just think they do need to have three or four big signings and go, listen, this is a new focus for us as a club. You're here to stay. Do you know what I mean? If you want to go and 6 months left of your contract, see you later. Do you know what I mean? But we will replace you.
Do their business better. Cash in.
Yeah, exactly.
They're acting like a feeder club.
Yeah.
Mm. Which is not something that you would ever associate with a team with the Man United tag, even if they are relatively new on the women's scene. Jilly, we had a bit of a Jilly Ferry derby at the weekend with Liverpool taking on West Ham. How do you feel whenever those games roll around?
It's hard, really, because I've obviously got great memories of both clubs. But I fancied Liverpool against West Ham anyway. I think West Ham have had a poor season aside from the really result against Arsenal. You know, I think that result saved, in all honesty, Skinner. I think that, and obviously then they had to beat Bristol. But realistically, in regards to the rest of their season, they're not where they should be. Do you know what I mean? Really, realistically. And I think Liverpool, obviously I've got a soft spot for Liverpool. Obviously I've got a lot of time for Beardy and the girls. They're all such a nice bunch of girls as well, good group. And I was disappointed, really, because I thought, after the start of the season, I fancied Liverpool to go and to get to an FA, get to a cup final. And I really thought the FA Cup was going to be their one. They should have beat Leicester. And now they would be looking at a decent draw in the FA Cup semi-final. So I think for them, they will be really disappointed with that. But I think Kerry Holland was a huge miss for them in the Leicester game. And obviously, I think yesterday she had a fantastic game. But it is hard when they play each other. I have to try and stay neutral. But yeah, Liverpool done well to get the points.
And Karen, in terms of across the rest of the league, some interesting results. We look at Tottenham just getting past Leicester, but I think that kind of shows where they've come to in the league compared to previous years. You know, that was the sort of game that we would have watched Tottenham be tripped up by.
Yeah. It's hard sometimes when you score that early in a game, you kind of expect that they're going to go on, kick on and dominate. But it's interesting because they're going to play each other in the cup. So I don't know, is there a bit of that at play as well? Their manager was talking after and he was kind of saying, no, this was good because we know we can beat them now. And should give them confidence. And he's probably trying to get them, you know, used to being or comfortable with the favourites tag. You know, they've been the underdog, we'll say, for a couple of seasons. And every time they go on a good run, we're like, oh, this is good by Spurs. But the expectation is now that they will get to an FA Cup final. So I think he probably would have preferred a more dominant performance than what he saw. But at the same time, it's a confidence booster, I guess.
We'll take the confidence booster. And then the final game that we haven't looked at is Everton losing to Aston Villa. Everton struggling to get goals once again. They've the lowest goal scored in the league. Villa was an important win for them considering how their season has gone so far and kind of needing the confidence. We saw Kenza Daly pop up and Ebony Salmon, who's actually, I always expected her to make a bit more of an impact. Maybe it's just she's still so young, but she has a lot of potential. Chilly, for Aston Villa, what's a successful season look like at this stage?
Just finishing up as high up as they possibly can, really. Getting as many points to the board. I think their game against Arsenal in the Cup was, well, they was poor. You know, I think there was a big, you could tell really the big difference between the two clubs. But I do think with Aston Villa, it's been hard for them this season because of injuries. They've not really been able to have the consistency. I think Kenza Daly, for being out for quite a large chunk of the season, you could tell obviously early on how much that affected Rachel Daly. Not having her, then she didn't obviously have Hansen for a few games too. And yeah, I just feel obviously they're missing, like Lucy Stanifall, for example, who will be a player who'll get her foot stuck in. Lucy Parker, who's obviously a player for West Ham. Key players have been missing for them, and I feel it's been a difficult season for them. But I think, yeah, the best thing for Villa is just to take each game as it comes and just try and rack up as many points on the board. And sort of, there's not really much else to play for this season for them, so it's just getting as many points as you can, and obviously come the end of the season, re-going and regrouping for next year, because they're gonna wanna be finishing a lot higher. I think when you see the teams like Liverpool doing what they're doing, there's no reason why other clubs can't be doing this as well. So, yeah, I think just get finished and trying to aim as high as you can and trying to be the best.
I think it's important, that they have a strong finish so that players don't kind of start thinking, looking up the table and saying, oh, I could probably get a game for them if they came in for me. You know, you want them motivated to grow within the team as opposed to maybe taking their eyes elsewhere.
Slight concern from an Irish perspective as well, Karen. Heather Payne out with an undisclosed injury. We have those slightly important games coming up in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, hopefully it's precautions, right? Because we can't afford anything to go wrong.
If it makes us feel any more bet, like he said, some people were confirmed, definitely were not, and she was a doubt. So hopefully that means that she's on her way back. Jilly, will we be seeing you over in the Aviva for Ireland versus England?
Well, if I can get some work, then I'll be coming over there, definitely. I think it'd be a great game.
Well, we're putting it out there. We will certainly take you on if you want to come over. We will do a live podcast with you, no problem whatsoever.
I'll be there then.
Great stuff, Jilly. Thank you so much for joining us.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
So that is this week's edition of the Koi Gig podcast. If you have any comments or you want to get onto us about our team of the week, or you know, any movie requests that you want for Karen, since she's now Conquer TV as her agent, I will personally be taking a 10% fee of any ones that come in through our Twitter, Koi Gig Pod on Twitter. The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is sponsored by Cadbury, official snack partner to Republic of Ireland women's national team. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will see you all again next week.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball, in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.